This week in KMA Land, Shen Council receives SCIA update. Progress reported on Shenandoah Wastewater Plant Project. Grassley and Ag leaders hail Trump farm bailout package. Search underway for Pottawatomie County's next supervisor. Daggett elected Creston mayor in special election. And a Montgomery County Christmas tradition returns. I'm Mike Peterson. Economic development efforts continue behind the scenes in Shenandoah. By unanimous vote Tuesday night, the Shenandoah City Council approved the Shenandoah Chamber and Industry Association's annual report for 2025. SCIA Executive Vice President Greg Connell brought the council up to speed on numerous fronts, as required in a development agreement with SCIA approved by the council last year. One project Connell highlighted was the Shenandoah Hills Wind Project under construction along the Fremont-Page County line south of Shenandoah. Connell says the $234 million project entails 33 wind turbines in Fremont County and 21 in Page County. While saying the city of Shenandoah won't receive tax revenue from the 200-megawatt project, Connell adds the Shenandoah School District is a big winner.
85% of the windmills are in the Shenandoah School District. As a result of that, Shenandoah School District will receive approximately $1.3 million a year once the 30% valuation is reached after 6 years.
And besides the wind turbines, Connell says MidAmerican Energy is adding a new facility in the community.
I think everybody's seen the MidAmerican Maintenance and Operations Building on Highway 59. It's a 10,000 square foot building on 5.5 acres. There'll be 8 maintenance contractors and a manager at that facility, so that is some added employment to our community.
And Connell also updated the council on activities of the former Eaton facility. Currently, 3 companies lease space inside the 366,000-square-foot facility, including Seedbox Solutions. Connell sung the praises of the Good Hope, Illinois-based company, which leases 120,000 square feet for servicing, cleaning, and requiring green totes.
These guys are special. There's 4 actual owners of the facility, and they are brilliant. They're motivated, super conscious about employees and you know what you need to make sure you maintain quality employees. We couldn't ask for a better company.
Other Eaton facility tenants are Pella Corporation, which is using 75,000 square feet, and Bauer Built Tire Company, which occupies 135,000 square feet, mainly for storage. Connell also offered personal observations on the idling of Green Plains' Clean Sugar Technology facility earlier this year. Late last month, the council approved an agreement finding an uncured event of default under the private development agreement between the city and Green Plains Shenandoah LLC, authorizing city staff to execute and deliver a notice of suspension. Connell recalled efforts by SCIA and the city to lure the plant to the community.
You know, we worked hard to get this facility in Shenandoah. This was considered a real prize. We obviously did a significant TIP project that is actually paused at this point. SCIA provided 25 acres to them, valued at over $500,000. The state provided some incentives on top of that. All of the 11 Green Plains facilities were vying for this. We got it.
Green Plains officials announced the sugar plant's idling in March, several months after a ribbon-cutting ceremony in late May 2024. Connell says the problems leading to the plant shutdown had nothing to do with its technology, which employed an ion exchange process to produce refined sugar.
An ion exchange process at this huge level is just the same thing as your water softener that you have in your home. And what it does is there's an ion exchange between NaCl, which is the salt, and then that ion exchange removes certain hard minerals from the sugar so that it's a refined product. It is the only refined product of sugar. That's why they call it clean sugar.
Connell says the problem involved a bottleneck associated with the plant's discharge, producing chloride levels not meeting state and federal standards.
Even going through a wastewater treatment facility, it's still way above what the DNR or the Iowa DNR and the national DNR will allow. And that's right, you should be shut down. If you cannot meet those demands, we're not going to go back to the days of dumping stuff into our rivers that is not healthy for anybody.
Connell says company officials are exploring the construction of a pre-treatment facility at the plant, thus eliminating the bottleneck. Connell believes the bottleneck issue will be solved and the clean sugar operations reopened in 2026 or 27. Another major project in Shenandoah continues unabated. By unanimous vote Tuesday night, the Shenandoah City Council approved pay applications to All-Purpose Construction totaling more than $1.7 million and more than $7,600 to Thiel Geotech Incorporated for the project designed to bring the 63-year-old facility up to speed and state and federal wastewater levels. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen says construction continues at the plant despite the recent inclement weather.
We just met with them last week. They are moving, you know, they're doing what they can do with the weather the way it is. You know, I would say probably we're roughly a third of the way done. You know, we're still looking at the completion early in 27. Right now, things are moving ahead. You know, the weather can be like it is, and they can continue to do what they can. We will stay close to having that completion date of what we want.
McQueen says construction continued despite a delay in the USDA's approval of the city's payments because of the federal government shutdown. The mayor called it a long 43 days.
We were in contact with them, you know, and it was no fault to the city, to the All-Purpose Construction, to the subs or anybody else. When that shutdown happened, you know, of course, the USDA went on furlough. And so that stopped any of our payments from getting basically stamped to be approved, even though the council went ahead and approved them. So we went ahead and did that for the fact that when they did open back up, everything would be ready to go.
McQueen credited the project's contractor for not halting the project despite the USDA's delay in approving the payments. KMA land farmers were all ears Monday afternoon as the Trump administration announced a $12 billion farm aid package. At a press conference with President Trump, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins, and several members of Congress, the USDA announced up to $11 billion will flow through the new Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, providing one-time support for row crop producers, including corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, cotton, peanuts, and other major commodities. The remaining $1 billion will be reserved for specialty crops and sugar, with details still being developed. In a post on X, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley said the aid is welcome news for family farmers. Speaking on his weekly public affairs program Monday, Grassley says the relief package is similar to the $10 billion authorized back in March for the 2024 crop year.
And it's to reflect the losing prices that farmers are getting for corn and soybeans. Obviously, it involves other commodities, but I think for Iowa, it's mostly corn and soybeans. And the administration has $30 billion that we appropriated to the Commodity Credit Corporation that we call CCC that the money will be coming out of.
One of KMA Land's leading agribusiness officials was among those reacting to the president's farm bailout package. Chad Tettinger is a fourth-generation farmer and CEO of Cattlemen's Heritage Beef Company, which is planning to construct a $520 million beef processing plant on 132 acres of land in Mills County. While saying he and other farmers want stabilized commodity prices, Tettinger tells KMA News the bridge payment program is good news for agriculture.
Anything that helps the family farm and sustains the family farm into the next generation, I'm for. And obviously we're in a very volatile time frame with corn and beans that are, you know, showing that we need some help on the farm and that, you know, you can't have every acre in corn and beans planted at a loss because of a trade war and then expect everybody to make it, right? So we don't want bankruptcies. We need to stabilize the family farm.
Monday's announcement follows months of speculation and reports of producers struggling to cope with tariffs imposed on foreign goods. Tettinger was asked whether the tariffs have had an adverse effect on grain and cattle prices.
You know, it's hard to say, to be fair, exactly how the tariffs have affected, especially on the row crop side. We have excess. We have a big surplus of crops. So is it the tariffs and the trade war that have completely kept our pricing lower as a part of our surplus? I think it's probably a combination of everything.
Well, saying the cattle market has been good this year, Tettinger says cattle supplies remain a concern.
Now, we've gone the last 30 days through a cycle where it came down quite a bit, and now it's building its way back up. I think we just have to accept as consumers in this country that, you know, we have the lowest numbers of cattle on feed since the 1950.
News of the farm package comes as Cattlemen's Heritage has been working with Legacy Beef Co-op, which will supply cattle to the company under a recently approved agreement. The search is underway for a new Pottawatomie County supervisor. At the Pottawatomie County Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday morning, Board Chair Brian Shea read a statement regarding the vacancy created by a district judge ruling last week that Scott Belt could not return to his seat on the board. Judge Roger Saylor issued the ruling from the bench after hearing nearly 2 days' worth of arguments and testimony after a legal petition was filed by County Attorney Matt Wilbur against Belt last month, citing Belt's actions at a town hall meeting in Carson November 5th and several other incidents of alleged drunken conduct by Belt. At Tuesday's meeting, Shea says the county is currently accepting applications for the open elected seat.
Those interested in applying for this seat on the Board of Supervisors should submit a letter of intent that includes reasons for interest in the position, qualifications, and relevant experience that may include community involvement, public service, or leadership roles.
However, Council Bluffs resident Brian Jack Holder questioned the formation of the Board of Supervisors Vacancy Committee. Holder says the committee has yet to complete the necessary organizational matters before deciding to appoint or call for a special election to fill the vacancy. While acknowledging that Iowa code is relatively slim when it comes to filling supervisors' vacancies, Holder says the notices have been sent out thus far do not comply with state law.
This committee was supposed to notify the public that the electors of the district or the county, as the case may be, have the right to file a petition requiring that the vacancy be filled. They also had a duty to notify the public that they have the unilateral administrative discretion to call for a special election. So the two notices that they've published, neither one of those notices comply with Iowa code. They didn't state the Iowa code section that they are relying upon to publish the notice, and they didn't notify the public that we have the right to a special election.
Vacancy committee members met Wednesday. That committee is comprised of County Auditor Mary Ann Hanusa, Recorder Andrew Motes, and Treasurer Leah Voss under Iowa code. The person appointed or elected would fulfill the remainder of Belt's unexpired term, which runs through December 31, 2026. Creston filled its mayor's vacancy this week with a familiar name. Unofficial election results from the Union County Auditor's Office for Tuesday's special mayoral election indicate that Douglas Daggett was elected mayor with 290 votes, or just over 39% of the vote. Growing up on a farm near Lenox, Daggett moved to the Twin Cities area of Minnesota and eventually graduated from Rosemount High School. After attending Faith Baptist Bible College in Ankeny, Daggett earned his law degree from the University of Iowa and practiced law in Creston since 1997. Daggett tells KMA News he hadn't seriously considered running for the mayor's post until he headed to the polls last month for the November city school election.
Somehow the next morning, I woke up with the thought in my brain of, would it be something to be a candidate in the special election for the Creston mayor? And I spent a few days working through that, and I talked to some close friends and a family member, and decided that, this was as good a time as any if I wanted to do a public service kind of a office.
Daggett says his interest in public service also came from his late father, Horace Daggett, who was a longtime Southwest Iowa state representative through the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. Before his passing in 1998.
He was a state legislator in Southwest Iowa for 24 years. And so from my father, I learned the value of hard work and public service. And I saw him work in the legislature for his constituents.
Daggett succeeds Waylon Clayton, who resigned in September and will fill out the unexpired term through December 31st, 2027. Unofficial results show Christopher Rindle placed second with 243 votes, or 32.7%, while Josh Thompson rounded out the three-person race with 202 votes, or 27.1%. Clarinda officials hope to have infrastructure work on a new business park development out for bid early next year. At its regular meeting Wednesday evening, the Clarinda City Council unanimously approved the final plat for the Hugh and Maxine Loudon Business Park, located in roughly 50 acres of land along the Highway 2, Highway 71 bypass between AgriVision Equipment and AgriLand FS. City Manager Gary McLarnon told KMA News the move is one of the last pieces needed to finalize engineering for the infrastructure proposed for the development.
Now that we've got the final plat, I met with the engineer to go over the grading plan last week. So the engineers now will put their final touches on the design engineering work on it, and then we'll be ready to put it out for bids in January. So excited about getting that process started.
The preliminary plat calls for 21 lots with entrances located off the bypass, South 8th Street and East Garfield Street. Earlier this year, the council approved using roughly $3.5 million in general obligation corporate purpose bonds to install the necessary infrastructure for the business park, including items such as streets, water, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, and street lighting.
That way, it really maximizes the amount of lots that we can have available for people. So it's really going to be nice. There will be access not only off the bypass, but off of 8th Street, and then also off of Garfield Street. So we'll have three different ways to access the business park.
Plans also call for adding turning lanes along the bypass at the business park entrance. So long as the infrastructure work goes out for bid in January, McLarnon says the hope is to have contractors breaking ground later next spring and complete work by summer 2026. Fundraising efforts continue to cover some of the Clarinda School District's unseen needs. By unanimous vote late Wednesday afternoon, the Clarinda School Board accepted a $200,000 donation from the Clarinda Foundation as part of its 2025 Cardinal Challenge grant campaign. Foundation officials announced the effort back in October to cover some of the district's remaining needs, such as those included in previous bond issue referendums rejected by voters. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, Clarinda School Superintendent Jeff Privia says the grant is part of the campaign's goal of $600,000.
The Clarinda Foundation has challenged the community to raise an additional $200,000, and they will match that for a total of $400,000. So if we can get our community to raise $200,000 for HVAC and those kind of things that we had to take out of the project, that'll be about a total possibly of around $600,000 donation.
With the first donation in hand, the board approved quotes from Alberio Energy of more than $40,000 to replace the unit ventilator and miscellaneous points controllers, and more than $62,000 to replace air handling, mechanical air handling controllers, and boiler system integration at the 712 complex. For more than a half century, a Montgomery County farm has been one of KMA Land's top Yuletide destinations. Following months of preparation, the traditional Baird Christmas light display shines for the first time this holiday season, beginning at 5 this evening. Located at 1233 E Avenue in Montgomery County, the display features a massive collection of illuminated animated characters, buildings, and vehicles celebrating Christmas. Chris Baird is the son of the late Jack Baird, who spearheaded the display for more than 50 years. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Monday morning, Baird says the display actually started small and blossomed over the decades.
Originally, my grandfather brought home some Christmas lights, and they were hung on the fence near the house, and us kids enjoyed them, and it just kind of kept expanding from there. I got into elementary and junior high, and I started putting up more and more Christmas lights, and people started coming by, and I think that's kind of when the tradition started of the Baird's Christmas Light Farm.
Now, Baird says the family elected to continue the tradition following Jack's passing on Christmas Day 2022.
That was one of the things that we promised to him, because we knew it was so important to both him and my mom from the early years when we started, you know, making it bigger and bigger, and it was important to our family. I don't know what we'd do if we didn't do it. I guess for as many years as we've been doing it now, it's just part of our family.
Baird says one of the challenges is keeping the display fresh each year. Work on this year's display began in October with longtime family friend Sandy Severin handling preliminary efforts. At one point, Baird says three generations of family members worked on the display. After tonight, residents can view the Baird Christmas lights every night from 5 to 10 p.m. until January 3rd. And that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Have a great weekend. This week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.